It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Hello, everybody. That was Coyote by Wooden Tooth. And we've mentioned it before on the podcast. I think that the band very kindly allowed us to use that as the theme tune for the podcast. Sadly, Pete Nairn, the guitarist from the band, has passed away. So we just want to send our thoughts to Pete's family and Rory, Derek and Ian from the band. If you want to hear more of Wooden Tooth, I highly recommend their EP Winter, from which that track is taken. We're very grateful to the band that for the fact they've allowed to use the track for all this time, and like I said, thoughts with Pete's family at this time. This is, however, the Scottish Rugby podcast brought to you by the Scottish Rugby blog. I am Cammy Black. We've got a packed podcast this evening. There's been breaking news and all sorts flying around the internet just before we've come on air. I'm joined to help me wade through that. I'm joined by Ian Hay. Good evening, Ian.
Hello, Cammy, and hello everyone else who's listening and watching right now as we speak.
And hello also to live from the Linton Travel Tavern, we've got Craig Manson. Hello, Craig.
Good evening, all. And as per Ian, good evening, all the listeners and the viewers.
Yeah, so you can, like as mentioned, you can watch us live. We're live on YouTube, Twitter, Twitch, Facebook. We're also live on our Patreon page, patreon.com/Scottish Rugby Podcast, where you can sign up from £3 per month. For £5 a month, though, you get your name read out on the podcast. So thank you very much. George Pilley has signed up for £5 a month. And I've got a couple of other names as well that I need to read out next week that I haven't had time to prepare for. So we've had a few other people, lots of people signing up for the podcast. For that, you get ad-free audio version of the podcast, and you also get a bonus weekly episode where we put the world to rights and talk about things sometimes outside of Scottish rugby and sometimes outside of rugby as well. So we try and keep the main podcast now to a tight 60 minutes where possible, and patrons then get a bonus 60 minutes on top of that where we're a little bit more freer with our language, so to speak. Should we start with the breaking news tonight then? Because about 2 hours before we've come on air tonight, World Rugby have released their judgment against Razi Erasmus. And although we're the Scottish Rugby podcast, this was around his behaviour during the Lions tour. And obviously this time around, we had a fair bit of representation. And plus, we've just played South Africa. So why not? Let's talk about this rather than talking about the game.
Yeah, great idea.
So I think at the time I said, when the video came out and when there was all the Jaakko Johan nonsense, and I know I came on the podcast 3 sheets to the wind after a bottle of wine, said to be Jaakko Johan, it all seemed really fun at the time. And I kind of split opinion. I thought, you know, if it's adding to the narrative of the game, I don't mind. It's a bit of drama. But having read the judgment and actually all the stuff that was kind of going on behind what we saw on the internet, it's not great. It's pretty awful. I'm stopping myself from swearing there. Most people will know that Razi Erasmus released a 36-minute, I think, long video picking apart all the refereeing decisions from the Lions' first test. There was then a Twitter account that was kind of tweeting clips and asking him what he thought of things, which may or may not have been him. So World Rugby have found him guilty on all 6 counts that he was charged with. And I'll see if I can find, I've got the counts here on my phone. The judgment was 80 pages long. I've managed to read most of it. I'm going to have to read more because there's a lot going on. So you're guilty of the six charges are, when I find it, on my phone, I've got to disappear.
Phil, Craig,
now.
Phil, quick.
Here we go. Here they are. Threatened a match official that unless a requested meeting took place, he would publish footage containing clips criticising the match official's performance and then making good on that threat. 2, attacked, disparaged and or denigrated the game and the match officials. 3, did not accept or observe the authority and decisions of match officials. 4, published or caused to be published criticism in the manner of which match official handled a match. 5, engaged in conduct or activity that may impair public confidence in the integrity and good character of the match official and brought the game into disrepute when he published or caused to be published the Erasmus video. So he's been found guilty on all 6 charges. South African rugby have been found fined £20,000. £20,000. Razi's been suspended from all rugby activities for 2 months and suspended from all match day activities until the 30th of September 2022. So that includes match press conferences, being in the stadium on match day, I think even kind of preparations for matches as well.
He won't be carrying any water soon, will he?
No, there'll be a job on sporting vacancies. What a carrier here must be able to operate earpiece and microphone.
Must be able to shout fold.
It's I had my doubts, Craig, that he was going to be found guilty because I thought his argument was going to be I didn't post the video or know anything about it. However, he seems to have, I don't know if it's an age thing, but basically him and the guy that produced the video were like, we put it online and we didn't understand then that the world could see it. And then when we worked out the world could see it, we didn't do anything about it.
It's quite something. I was with you. I was quite, you know, dismissive of it and thought it's a bit, you know, he's being a bit of a whiner. Ah, well, you know, that's the way it goes. And also was very critical of World Rugby, saying, what are they going to do about it? They're never going to do anything. They're toothless. But actually, it makes quite disturbing reading when you go into some of the depths of it, considering the fact that rule one for a criminal is not to tell everyone what you're going to do, then do it. and I'm not saying he's a criminal, but you know, he's telling them that he's going to, if they don't do what he says, he's going to release the video.
The thing is, like, right, that's fine, right? I mean, it's not fine, but like, if you imagine, if this is Henry Hill and the Goodfellas, right? That film is going to be really short if he does what Raz is. Like, it's, you know, when criminals will go in and the mafia, they'll lean on people and say, if you don't do what we say we're going to do, then this is going to happen to you. But he then followed it up with an email. Right? You don't lean on somebody and then follow it up in writing just in case they didn't understand. Just
to formally advise, we are leaning on you right now.
Yeah.
As per my visit to your shop earlier where I demanded £50 million, you know, £50,000 for protection, I will burn your shop down if you do not pay me that money. I hope this is clear. Kind regards, Henry Hill. Yeah.
So there's quite some. There's some. You know, Nick Berry's also put some. You know, his testimony as well was quite not disturbing, but it was a fairly sad affair, and I'm you know, it's not been very nice. You know, I have to. I was very just as you say, it's a lot worse than everybody, I think, really thought about it. They thought he was just being a bad loser, but actually, it's been pretty rubbish.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one. The main thing is he's gone to Nick Berry, the referee, and said, look, you're going to have to own up to what you've done, otherwise I'm going to release a video and it's going to go viral. And they were able to substantiate that, one, because Razzy Erasmus sent an email very strongly hinting that was going to happen. And also, Nick Berry immediately went to Ben O'Keefe, Dr. Ben O'Keefe, as he's referred to in the judgment, just to give him the world over, going, how can we make Ben O'Keefe seem more reliable? Just stick the title doctor on the front. And so Nick Berry had told Ben O'Keefe that they'd had a conversation immediately after it happened, which obviously corroborates what he'd said. But I think it's the like you said, Craig, there's a statement from Nick Berry that says, I feel Mr. Erasmus engaged in a character assassination of me on social media. I've spent many years trying to build my reputation as an international referee, and in the course of his video, which is posted online, Mr. Erasmus has caused it unmeasurable damage. Though a small proportion of the rugby community will follow the outcome of this matter and in the process obtain an accurate account of what really occurred, the wider rugby community will only be aware of me in the context of this incident. I feel that regardless of the outcome and any sanctions imposed, my reputation as a referee and a person will forever be tarnished. Which is pretty strong words, Ian.
Yes, what's the phrase that we can't use at this time of recording about stuff that sticks? Yeah, so it's like when you know a lawyer says something in court and the judge says dismiss it, but that's not the problem. You know, it's already been heard. You know, it can still play a little bit of mind games. And I mean, the whole thing just strikes me as being quite narcissistic on Erasmus's behalf. He's to sit there for an hour. I mean, people don't have that long attention spans. You know, there's three of us here, me going for an hour, and that seems like it lasts forever, for God's sakes.
7 hours it took them. 7 hours apparently it took them to put that video together.
Christ almighty. Like you said, you know, sort of warning people, I will expose you, and then actually going ahead and doing it.
And then inviting him to join a WhatsApp group.
I've only sort of read the highlights from, you know, various other sources. But yeah, this is something I definitely want to read. But it's encouraging a pile-on. It's bullying from somebody in a position of high status. Is what it is. And like Nick Berry said, you know, it's constantly going to tar his name now.
Yeah, I think that for me, this fundamentally is going to change how referees interact with players. International level, and I think it's going to have to, because we've and we've talked on the podcast before, Wayne Barnes in particular, he's not so bad with Scotland now, but I think that in the days when, probably because he hadn't come across many Scotland players when he's refereeing European matches, he would, you know, he'd talk to the Irish guys. There's one particular match where he's calling them all by the first name and he's using the Scottish numbers. And that felt unfair and felt unbalanced. And even in this judgment, you've got Nick Berry corresponding with Razzie, calling him Razzie, and you've got, you know, a Razzie emailing him calling him Nick. And, you know, I think there is that, I suppose at club level, you'd have that, a pint with a referee in the bar afterwards and you'd be given the hospitality of the club. But I think at the stakes that are at international level in rugby, I don't think that kind of conviviality and that familiarity is going to be able to stand now, because, you know, somebody gets told, you know, someone else gets told that email, says, look, he's calling him Nick. They're on first names term. There's these guys, you know, it doesn't help. I don't think. And I think that Razzie Rasmus kind of like you almost using that familiarity to kind of get a bit of needle on a referee. I think it's going to have to change. I think World Rugby are going to have to give referees much more protection, Craig.
Well, I think that's where the call coming in for a world governing body for referees, rather than the referees being accountable to each of their governing bodies, you know, like the RFU or the SRU. I think this will push that the world, a world referee body more and more down the line, because now I'm not one for giving referees more power, but this is now going to get to a point where we're going to have to give them the ability to sort out these problems independently from World Rugby and go to World Rugby and have someone to represent them. Because I think this is, you know, I'm all for having some come and go with the ref and calling them their first name, etc., off the pitch. But there's always one that, it's like everything in life, there's always one that comes along and spoils it. And Razzie Rasmus has been the one who's come along and spoiled it, you know, for everyone. And I hope he has to go and stand in the corner and think about it.
Well, they're appealing. South Africa, they've announced tonight, Razzie Rasmus in South Africa have announced that they're appealing against it. So this is going to drag on even longer, Ian. I mean, it just seems, I don't understand what they have to. I've only read the judgment through once, but I struggle to understand based on the stuff in the judgment, which is pretty damning, how they could have the nerve to appeal and not just kind of let this go.
Oh, but it's okay. Marco Masotti and his team of New York lawyers will be on Razzie's side. Arrogant swine. It's a pretty clear-cut case. Video is out there. It has been witnessed on many, many occasions.
And they've admitted that they posted it online and that they knew it was visible to other people. They said the only you need a link to find it. That's what they said. You can only access it with a link, but they didn't make it private, which is possible on Vimeo.
Aye, so they haven't really taken many steps to ensure that once it was in the public domain, it came out of the public domain.
No, so they did the first morning, it had about 8 views, and some of those weren't from within South Africa. And Razzie messaged them, said, how the F can these people access it? But they didn't do anything about it. They didn't take it. They go, oh, right, we've made an error. We put this online. It shouldn't go online. They left it up there. I think it probably is still up there on Vimeo now, actually.
I'm sure I was watching it on... Oh, no, I was watching it on Vimeo. I thought maybe I'd seen it on YouTube. I mean, fine, they can drag it. We know they'll drag it out just to save face, or attempt to save face, but then just make it look worse. But I think a 20 grand fine's actually pretty lenient when you consider how much Mark Dodson got fined just for saying we'll take legal actions, you know, we're taking legal advice. Think 20 grand's kind of...
Mind you, he did start off with a threatening to do something. Maybe it's Mark Dodson's fault.
he's a leader. He's just following in his footsteps.
I think Pete Burns did point that out on Twitter earlier to me, kind of saying, you know, you look at the difference in the two. I think the cynical side of me says that was World Rugby... take criticism of themselves more seriously than criticism of officials, which is one way to look at it, and almost is almost certainly part of it. I think the other thing is that was it was run like a disciplinary, but it wasn't a disciplinary hearing like this. So I think with a disciplinary hearing, you'll have a range of sanctions. The SRU thing was a hearing, but it was about a breach of the participation contract, I think. So right. it wasn't a disciplinary. So I think all bets were off about how much they could be fined, because it's not within a strict tariff of what's ever allowable under disciplinary proceedings.
They don't have a framework for it.
No, they don't. So they just kind of pull the figure out of the air. But it is, you know, it's disappointing that, you know, it's only 20 grand. But somebody else has suggested that, you know, South Africa are pretty close to bankruptcy as a union, and therefore maybe World Rugby would take it easy on them. So they're not doing themselves any finances.
Yeah.
Don't think it's going to do them any favors by appealing. It's not going to save them any money.
No, especially not with New York lawyers.
No, I don't. And it kind of feels, it's slightly disappointing, because this South Africa team, you know, I know they're kind of a team you love to hate, but take Razi out of it. There's a lot of likable guys in that South African team. I like Sia Khaleesi, and they've dragged him into this. I mean, he was cited in the, you know, he's been cited as part of this, and Razi's dragged him into it by accusing Nick Berry of kind of showing bias against him because he was a black captain. Nick Berry was absolutely horrified by that accusation, actually went and personally spoke to Sia Khaleesi and said, "I'm really sorry if that's how it's come across. There's no way my intention to do that." And there's no evidence to back it up. So it's dragging this, you know, Sia Khaleesi is backed by Roc Nation. And there's this big effort to make Sia Khaleesi this, you know, this big figure that transcends rugby now. And this completely undermines it. And if South African rugby are going to carry on with it, they're going to take him down with them.
Yeah, I think was the specific moment mentioned, or one that somebody was angry about on Twitter, is when they were talking. Khaleesi went up to Berry and asked him something, and Nick Berry sort of laughed. And so it was like, look at him laughing in a black man's face. It's like, he's laughing at the sort of the gallus nature of the request, because I think it was, the penalty was blatantly obvious. But he's like, oh no, but there was something going on there. It's like, ha, don't be silly, see ya, off you go. And that's what they were sort of using as the example of racism, and that's clutching at straws from quite a distance.
Yeah,
but is it not just the way that Razi has clutched at every single thing to try and get his own way, and you know, he's bringing Sia Khaleesi into it and making him part of this I've got a word for it, but I can't use it on here, but this complete show. It's ridiculous. And yes, okay, the fine maybe should have been more, but I think obviously, I think, you know, him not being able to go near a rugby ground for a good year is probably the bigger part of it, you know.
Yeah, it's almost like a cult, though. And I did say cult. in South Africa, Razi and the current Springboks team, especially since they won the World Cup, they're so far as a lot of South African fans are concerned, they're completely untouchable. This is all a World Rugby conspiracy to take them down, and it's the fact they've now appealed is only going to reinforce that feeling. And I kind of think, you know, I think you're right, Craig. It's the arrogance of him. When you read the judgment, the whole thing is complete arrogance. They said, you've insulted Nick Berry. I haven't insulted him, but if by criticising his performance I've insulted him, then yes, I've insulted him. It's just some of the stuff he's come up with. The fact that he kind of pleaded poverty as well in his defence. Please don't fine me because I'll lose money. Please don't ban me because I'll lose money from my performance bonuses. You know, despite the fact he's dragged the guy. You know, what international referees are on nothing? You know, probably a reasonable amount of money, but they've all got second jobs. It's not a full-time job for them. You know, so given what Razi will be on, the fact he's then kind of dragged somebody's name through the mud who's worked hard to build their reputation for him is just, yeah, it's disgusting.
One other little bit that I've found, one of the excerpts, a further point made in mitigation and written submission on his behalf is that any suspension should also not be interpreted by the players as retribution for their coach standing up for them. And this is the big sort of bit. With respect, he appears not to appreciate the corrosive effect his behaviour has on the game more widely, as well as the viewing public and press. We cannot see how such conduct improves his standing or moral authority in the eyes of his players or of informed observers.
Yeah. There's a couple of... Yeah. there's a couple of things there. I think one is that I think the media plays into this, and you know the I'm coming more of to the mind that we just take the referee out of it, and we shouldn't criticize referees anymore because it's their interpretation, it's their game, the team should adapt to that, and the referee should be it's their interpretation of the laws at the end of the day, and you might disagree with it, but it's pointless arguing with it. What's happened, what the decisions have been made, and if your team's in a position to lose because of a couple of refereeing decisions, that's down to your team, not the referee. I think the media feeds into that because the narrative of every game is the influence the referee had on it, not the influence that there are. I think Sam Lana said on Twitter, there are more interesting things to talk about in rugby than what the referee's doing and what his decisions are. And, you know, the Sky fed in that by bringing Nigel Owens in to analyse every single decision. Now, I don't mind him being there as an ex-referee explaining the reason for a decision or what the law says, but what he was there is saying whether he would have made that decision or not. So it just feeds into the narrative that referees are right or wrong rather than they're just interpreting the laws.
Do these people, in order to make sure that no mistakes happen, are we going to end up with a squad of referees like you get in NFL? It's going to be refereeing by committee, which will then make the game last even bloody longer.
That'd feed into the South African standard, wouldn't it? Because they don't like games being played at pace.
Yeah, we'd all have to just get really good at scrumming and hoofing the ball up in the air.
Yeah. The other side of it, Craig, I suppose, is it feeds into the club game. So I was looking at the SIU disciplinary hearing records for this season. Just out of interest, I was looking it up for something else. And there's quite a large number on there for referee abuse and talking back to the referee. And all this kind of narrative of the influence that referees have on games does filter down. And, you know, even that somebody turned around, you know, referee, you're killing us here with all these penalties. It's with the referees not incurring the penalties. Have we lost Craig? Oh, there he is.
Sorry, I'm breaking up. Peter, I'm going to have to leave and come back in. Sorry, guys.
That's fine. No worries, Craig. Craig went really... He sounded like he'd been possessed there, Ian. Quite concerning.
I thought there was going to be a ransom demand.
It's Razzie's.
Razzie has kidnapped Craig.
Bish, I mean, you watched... You know, you kind of go and cover a lot. You cover kind of club games for the offside line. You've covered a bit of Super 6, but it does kind of... When I played, the whole thing's the referees. You call him sir and he's impeachable and his decision goes and... It's not the referee's fault if you're incurring penalty after penalty. It's the team's fault for not listening to what the referee's asking you to do.
Yeah, I suppose a failure to adjust. I mean, sometimes... And there was a complaint I saw from Musselboro recently. It wasn't about... Well, it was about stuff they thought the referees were missing. They thought that they were missing a lot of high shots from the Mar players, which, you know, it's not... It's not the sort of decisions, but with these things, it's always, you know, little infringements at the breakdown. And let's be honest, everyone's at it. You know, I think, did they not say there was a sort of test match, not a test with a small t, and they noticed something like 196 breakdown infringements over the course of 80 minutes. You know, so everyone's at it.
It'd be poor, it'd be a dull game. It'd be a really dull game if those things weren't going on.
Yeah, I mean, let's not kid ourselves and say that, you know, it's probably worse now because everything can be shown in slow motion on social media. But abusing referees has been going on for quite a while. It's just, you know, it's more echoed now by our Twitters and whatnot. And like you said, if it starts bleeding down into club games, I can't say I've noticed it being a massive thing. You know, you hear the odd thing from the stand. But I don't know if standards are dropping as such. Maybe I actually noticed during the Super 6, there's quite a lot of teams got marched back for back chat.
Yeah. I think we said during the standard of refereeing in the Super 6, I thought was excellent.
I thought it was very good. Yeah. It was
really good. We had an article, there's an article on the blog, scotchrugbyblog.co.uk, from Rory Campbell, who used to be on the podcast, used to write for the... for the blog, and Rory's a member of the Borders Refereeing Society, and Rory also referees. He's done some. He does international sevens. He does. He's done some Super 6 games.
I think he did a game I was at recently. There was Rudy Campbell who did.
Very, very good ref. From what whenever I've seen Rudy in charge, he's always does a very good job. And I think he's one of the up-and-coming referees. Now, he's written an article for the blog talking about kind of fact that you know, they're struggling to get referees to referee games. And stuff like this doesn't help.
No, not certainly won't, because, you know, if that's what, you know, once you reach the peak of your career, you get somebody in a position of more sort of power and influence, just drags your name through the mud and calls you all sorts of things. So it's not going to encourage that. And obviously there was the incident a couple of weeks ago. I think it was when John was hosting last week. A referee in Cumbria had said, he was like, I'm done. And, you know, they're really short of refs. And JB had his say on it.
Yeah.
Guess what? It was a terrible take.
What, you shock me.
I know.
Wow, an awful take from the Chasers Rugby podcast. Shall we talk about, while we're talking about Razzie, shall we talk about the South Africa game then?
Yes, let's
forget about, we'll forget about the fact.
Prowling the touchline like a cheetah.
Cheetah kind of telling guys to fire high, telling these players to fire high balls up in the air and coaching them from the sidelines and walking on with his water. But let's talk about the South Africa game. I know. I watched it back to do the player ratings, Ian, and I know, I think you've watched it back as well. I don't think it was as bad as some people have made out. I think there's a couple of key moments. I think the key moment for me is the Blair Kinghorn turnover, and when McAnally loses, we're still in the game when McAnally loses that line out, the box clear. We get another chance further up the pitch and Ashman overthrows it. I think that's the moment when the game, I'm not blaming it on those two, on the hookers, but that's the moment I think where the game went. And that's what, like 760 odd minutes?
Didn't write it down, but it was quite late on. Was it? Maybe it's.
Because we essentially got the Hog scores his second. From the restart, we boot up the field. Kinghorn chases, gets the turnover, we get a line out, and that was putting pressure straight back on them, and that was the point at which we could have got back into the game. But instead, as is always the way with Scotland, for some reason when we're in these positions we throw to the tail of the bloody line out.
I read a wee bit of analysis, and I was comparing it to the Ireland game when Ireland completely destroyed our line out. We only, looking back at it, we lost three and then won. I know it says only lost three, but, you know, the Ireland game was a complete disaster. So I think we lost three and then one was tipped by Gilchrist, but then recovered by South Africa. But it's the clutch moments, as we say, because we lost the first one. I wrote down when we've lost them all. We lost one. First one got lost to the middle. And, you know, fair enough, you know, you want to go to the tail 5 metres out, but are Scotland really going to try and maul South Africa, by South Africa? Is that, I know the hookers have got a great scoring record, but were we really going to try that? The set piece isn't great. Well, obviously the scrum was a disaster, but I have a few opinions on that, incidentally.
Okay.
Should we do scrums?
If you want,
Johnny McGinty's not here, so he can't slander Pierre Schumann.
Johnny McGinty was only going by his feelings. He was going by the the Roman Poit just vibes feeling for it. I think the issue I think we had was, and they were with set piece and complete, I think it's almost like the old ways of Stirling Moss when he used to drive in the rain, race in the rain. He used to wiggle the car about and people go off. Stirling Moss is having trouble in the rain. Everyone's going to have trouble in the rain. And I think it's the same thing. People are believing that the South Africans are the best at set piece, at scrummage. So you load yourself up to, you're so concerned about it that it comes true, if you know what I mean. Xander was toast in the scrums, and at one point I've never seen him with his feet off the ground in my life before, and it was a fairly You know, the South Africans did have them, especially when they brought on their bomb squad at 49 minutes.
No, 39
minutes. Sorry, yeah, that's
four
what I mean.
Half time.
So yeah, it was difficult, and Johnny was saying that he felt that Schumann isn't showing or what's the word? He's showing
speed of speed of thought. I think was
speed
Johnny's
of
point.
Thought, but he was one of the things that stopped our scrum going fully back, like it was on roller skates. So it's a really difficult situation to be in, you know.
See, one of those things you mentioned there about Ferguson having his feet off the floor, should that not be a penalty to Scotland? I'm just trying to look the law up now, but there's a law about driving under your opponent and arching their back and it being dangerous. Because I remember when, you know, the usual suspects were distributing a clip. I think it was from Six Nations game of France going right through somebody and, you know, the opposite prop sort of his back getting arched and him getting popped up, and it looked really dangerous. And yeah. I'm sure there's a law about that if you, I don't know if you're meant to like stop driving. I mean, obviously there's popping up's different, but it's when the back is arched. Is
that would be down to the referee to stop that though, because they have to, if they think that the scrum is dangerous, then they have to blow the whistle. And he had a perfectly good view of it. Xander was just, unfortunately, he'd been tipped in sideways, and I've forgotten who he was up against. I don't know who it was.
Was it Oxenjay
that had him? Yeah. And unfortunately, he's got the pressure of the scrum coming behind him, and he's got the pressure of the scrum coming for him, and he just got in a bad position. And up he went. It's very rare to see an international prop with his feet off the ground, and I'm not blaming Xander completely in this. He just unfortunately was outclassed. But on the other side of things, I think we all had all. I think our forward pack didn't fire on all cylinders this weekend. You know,
I think the one that you're looking at, Ian, is players may push provided they do so straight and parallel to the ground. Is the law that you're looking at? So I assume the sanctions are penalty if you fail to do that. So I suppose if Xander's managed to be lifted up off his feet, then there's an argument to say that that's because a South African is not parallel to the ground and therefore has got underneath him. I suppose the counter thing is to say, is that because, you know, is that to do with the actions of his locks behind him?
It's also to Xander's shape as well. You know, because obviously you show me an international prop or even just any prop that isn't trying to get one over on his opposite number every single scrum. You're showing me a liar. So I think it's... Sorry, on you go, Ian.
No, sorry, I found a different law, 37C. Intentionally lifting an opponent off their feet or forcing them upwards out of the scrum, which is also a penalty. But I actually thought one of the, I can't remember if it was the first scrum, but certainly one where they got their first penalty. Inchi, I thought, because it was for wheeling, but I thought Inchi like took one step forward, then started wheeling round. Looked, his left leg certainly sort of went a bit out.
I think the problem with Scotland, the problem that we've got, and I think maybe Schumann's a bit more hardened than Xander. I think that for all his sandbags, Scotland have always lacked that kind of, I suppose it's the street smarts at scrum time. We all seem to be on the other end of, oh yeah, it's cheap. Well, I suppose it is cheap, but it's the margin. Let's call it marginal gains. The little things you can do to get to kind of like influence your opponent's body position, or the picture that you paint for the referee, or the picture that you're able to make your opposition number paint for the referee so it makes it look like it's his fault. Do you know what I mean? It's not, I don't feel like Scotland have ever been on the right side of that. Maybe we're too honest at scrum time, I don't know.
That's why we have to get South Africans in to play first.
And coach.
The issue, I think the problem we have is we don't. Now, I'm going to say a very sweeping statement here, but Rory Sutherland came out of what I would say, he was a late bloomer and he became what we could probably call world class because he was a Lion and he started a fair few of the Lions tests against South Africa, and he did a very, very good job in the set piece. We are shy of that. If you look at, Jamie Batty, we're even going back to the fact of who else did we bring along? Who else is on the list as a Scotland international prop? And if you look at, you've got things like, you get to that point of we had to bring up Daryl Marfo, for example, and we don't seem to have either the depth of front row and also second row coming through, or we aren't developing them correctly. So it's an interesting one. I think it was just an unlucky day, and I think Xander, we breed our props a little. We want our props to be far more mobile on the field, and so you lose a bit of the size that the South African props are, because they work well on the field, but they're not as mobile as our props. I think
in terms of size and physicality, I didn't really feel, Ian, that Scotland were overawed on at the weekend by South Africa. I mean, we fronted up in a way that we maybe haven't done against South Africa. I'm not saying we tried to play the South African way by trying to batter them. Obviously we're trying to go around them as well, but I don't really feel like, aside from in the scrum, I don't really feel like around the park that they bullied us much, which has maybe been the story of past tests with South Africa.
Yeah, it's maybe not fighting fire with fire, just more trying to cushion them coming right through at you.
Yeah.
The mall worked pretty well. Mall defence worked very well. Obviously they've made strides in that in the last couple of years. In terms of, because I remember it's like the 2015 World Cup game, I just remember like De Jager and Etzebeth started that, and every time De Jager got the ball, like meters after contact, it was just constant. It was taking two or three Scotsmen to bring him down. After first tackle, he's getting another 4 or 5 yards easy, and more people having to come in, and he smashed right through us. I don't think it was anywhere near as bad as that at the weekend. I thought Sam Skinner actually had a pretty good game.
Yeah,
he didn't seem to. No, we didn't do a lot with possession because we didn't have a great deal of it, but he certainly got around the park. Important line out steal, been a couple of big hits. I'm still not sure where his best position is.
I think that's probably his problem. I don't think Townsend knows where his best position is either. I think the way Scotland want to play, I think his best position is either starting lock or on the bench because he offers that versatility.
Yeah.
But I thought he definitely got around, and what I liked was that he showed up a lot in attack as well, not just in terms of carrying, but just kind of, as in link play as well. I mean, the run up to the try, so Hogg's first try, he was there.
He's
a lovely pass.
I think the Nick Haining experiment didn't work, unfortunately, because I really didn't. I didn't see anything that I didn't know about Nick Haining on the weekend. In fact, I would probably put underperformed at his door. I would have preferred to have seen Mish and Jamie Ritchie on both sides, and kept what we did against Australia, because our pack was pretty good against Australia. So, and okay, fair enough. The thing is, we had a heavier pack than South Africa as well. Mm. There's a people.
That's because Quagga Smith's only like 10 stone, isn't he?
Oh, Edinburgh reject Quagga Smith, something else, it was just a. For me, it was just an odd day, an odd game. the people that you expected to perform, I felt didn't perform to what we expect them to perform, or they had quiet games. It was just, it was odd.
I liked Matt Scott. I'm positive. I thought Matt Scott did a really good job at 12. I didn't feel like Ian screwing his face up at me for audio listeners, but I thought, I mean, he came in at first receiver for the second try. He showed up a lot in attack. He got a really good turnover. I think he kind of caught South Africa napping at the back at base of a rock at one point. I didn't feel like Scotland were any worse with him at 12 than they are with Sam Johnson at 12. I didn't feel like there was any step backwards with Matt Scott coming at the team, and I think that's a good thing. I think it shows we've got depth. I'd like to see him get another run out against Japan, if I'm honest, Craig.
Yeah, I've said on before, and I know Rory is a huge fan of Matt Scott. I loved Matt Scott when he was with Edinburgh, and he had a great partnership with Bennett. In the centre partnership, and he was fabulous at breaking through tackles and doing what Sam Johnson has been doing very, very well. I think you could take either of them in and out of the team and not see a difference in performance, just as you said, Cammy. The only thing that goes in Johnson's favour is the fact that he's got a partnership with Chris Harris. Because they've played so much together in a Scotland shirt, so that's the only thing you could maybe level at it.
Yeah, but I didn't really feel like, I felt like that was there, and I don't, you know, given that, you know, come, you know, you can kind of give me your response to this, but you know, it's 4 years since Matt Scott has played for Scotland, and he seemed to slot straight in, and I didn't really feel like the. You know, Chris Harris was struggling because he had Matt Scott inside of him or anything. They looked to kind of gel relatively quickly.
He was really kind of anonymous in attack until like Scotland had this, like, the sort of best spell we had was about the half hour mark. So, you know, usually people like to split it in quarters because we were sort of so under the caution at first half, I'm going to have to split it into eighth. So it was the third eighth of the match. We had a good patch where, like you said, he snaffled Willie LaRue when LaRue was trying to box kick clear. And what else did he do in that time? Then I think he had like one carry. But I think he only carried the ball three times. He didn't get onto the ball much. Because I don't think he's as good a passer as Johnson.
Johnson
can throw amazing passes. I've seen Sam Johnson can go 20-meter passes if he so requires to. But I think it needed a big performance to take the jersey off Johnson or Cammy Redpath. You know, when the prodigal son returns, I don't really think we got it. He held up all right in defence, but. A lot of time, Finn seemed to be under pressure quite a lot. I think Finn has he's a bit off a rapport with Sam Johnson, which maybe he doesn't have the same with Scott, just, you know, how they like to run. And I just think that Scott needed something big. He didn't quite provide it. And also the fact that he's now 31, he's going to be a filler, really. With looking ahead to the World Cup, you know, he'll be 33 at that point, be towards the end of his career. He's going to be a squad filler, really. He's going to have to take. He's going to take some big performances. People are going to have to drop form. He's going to have to keep his a good enough level to kick the likes of Sam Johnson or Cammy Redpath out.
I will just point out that Sam Johnson only made one more carry against Australia than Matt Scott did.
He made a lot more meters. Because Matt Scott made 7 meters and Sam Johnson made 30 something.
Oh, well, there you go. I tried, Craig.
Yeah.
tried to rebut his facts.
And he made one more tackle. They both missed two, but he made one more tackle.
Ian, yeah, didn't he be coming on here like Cammy did last week with all your
and
facts?
And he knocked Tong and Thor out.
I thought Stuart Hogg had a bad game. I think. He for all he scored his tries, I think that he just was in the person that was in the line at the right time. I don't think there was anything exceptional the way he took his tries, and that's not, you know, I'm not that, I don't want to kind of come down too hard on him, but anybody standing in the line at that point would have scored the tries. I don't think they were kind of great individual efforts. They were team efforts. But in defence, I thought he had a really weak game. He kind of seems to be back to where he was maybe 2 years ago, where he just isn't trusting, or is either he doesn't trust or he's taking on too much responsibility himself in defence.
Sorry, that's another thing about Matt Scott. He dog-legged for the second try.
There was the one try where he was defending in midfield. And maybe that might not be his fault. That might be a tactical failure, but your fullback shouldn't be in midfield. And all you had was Rufus McLean and Finn Russell covering for one of the tries. The other try, I think it was Matt Scott. And Matt Scott did dogleg, but Matt Scott also managed to get back enough to disrupt. And Rufus McLean was also there. And Hogg had come up far too... If Hogg had stayed back, it was a one-on-one and he would have easily pushed the player in touch. But because he rushed up, and then was in two minds as to what to do, even though Scott and McLean had the players fairly well covered, he overshot. And so it was a quick pass and they were away for the try. And we've seen him do that in the past. And I don't know if it's a kind of, he feels responsible for maybe like someone like Rufus McLean that he has to kind of come and help, or whether he doesn't trust that people are going to make the covering tackles and disrupt enough that he's going to be left with too much to do at the try. I don't know what it is, but he just seemed to have that I'm going to do everything myself kind of head on. And when Scotland play well, Stuart Hogg doesn't seem to have that pressure on his shoulders, Craig.
Yeah, we've talked about this before. And Hoggy seems to try to, if we're having a quiet game and we're not scoring many tries, or we're up against it a little bit, if the opposition's defence is in our face quite a bit, he tends to try to create or drag the team along at his pace, and unfortunately his pace tends to be it's almost like an overexcited puppy at times. He'll run out and just as you say, he'll run out in defence and try and smash someone in, and he misses the tackle, or he misses the, he doesn't slow the person up, and then he's not of any use at that point. He has suffered from that at times. Yes, don't get me wrong, he's a phenomenal player and we're lucky to have him. But you did see it. Sometimes he was quiet in the Lions tour as well, and there was just a few different things that just wasn't right with him on the weekend.
Are we being harsh, Ian?
I don't think, not particularly, no. I also think that he was, even sort of simple ones, he spilled a couple of high balls, which we thought he'd got rid of. Alas, here it's back again. Boringly, I think I'm just going to have to completely agree with you. He just finished off the tries. Like you said, you know, it was good interplay before that, and they just needed somebody with a bit of gas. Even if he didn't have enough gas, McLean was out on the wing to finish that second one off. It's not his best day at the office. Didn't really use his boot much either.
No.
But again, he did have one big spiral did go down. He did a one big spiral bomb down the far side of the field. I think we're escaping from our own 22, and we decided to play it, and the ball came to him, and he absolutely booted it up the field. But that's the only time I actually thought I saw him kick.
Yeah, I don't know whether or not, again, but I don't know if that's Hoggy or whether that's tactical, because Russell was covering the backfield, and normally Scotland the last few years, Russell and Hogg have both been back to do those, to kind of catch and then just spiral them back up the field. But Hogg wasn't there that much. And I don't know if that's tactical or just that he felt he needed to be further up the pitch as captain. But, I'll get sorted for the weekend, no doubt. Doohan.
You've got, just slightly in Hoggy's defence, though, that he's that much of a, you know, he's not in the position that he is in, of taking the game into his own hands. That'll be a tactical thing. He'll have been told to do that because there's, you know, to be out of position like that compared to what he has been before with Finn Russell, there's no way he's just decided he's going to do that and leave us lacking at the back. I'm sure he's, you know, it must have been something tactical.
Yeah. Yeah. Doohan, on the other hand, I just want to talk about Doohan before we go. And lots of the player ratings are up on the blog if you want to kind of see how we think about other players. But for a game that we thought Doohan was phenomenal at the weekend, Ian. I thought, you know, that the offload out the back in the run up to the try under the high ball, it really kind of, you look at a player from Scotland aside from Ali Price, and we could probably talk about Ali Price as well because I thought he had a really good game at the weekend as well. Doohan, his experience with the Lions really has kicked his game on quite significantly.
Yes, we all know how good he is at kick, Jason, now, thanks to the Lions. But yeah, it was, you know, that break in the first half, you know, it's sensational. And we saw sort of, all, like you said, you know, the offload of the try, but it's actually when he first gathers Finn Russell's cross kick, you know, he shows like ballet-like poise to sort of daintily skip back in field before, you know, hitting on the turbo boosters. Yeah, he's very much nearly the complete package and may feature later in Hands in the Ruck.
Ooh.
He did get us out of jail at the beginning as well when Finn Russell just about got caught in our own 22 when we decided to run it and Finn got the ball to him and he found that hole. And, well, it was probably the drink that was talking, but I thought he was going all the way. almost made Johnny spill his pint.
That's made it halfway and won the first point of the match, you know, by winning the penalty. Mm-hmm. So, from a normal play. I don't want to dwell too much longer on the South Africa game. We'll do a Japan preview if we're able to before, as we extra podcast later on in the week. I want to talk about Scotland women versus Japan, though, Craig. It was a strange game. And we talked before on the preview podcast, you and I and John kind of saying, well, look, given the result against Wales, that, you know, we'll expect Scotland to do quite well here. That, yeah, they lost the last game to Japan, but they made quite hard work of it in the first half, given that Japan were down to 14.
Yes, yeah. I was watching the game thinking, either Japan have really just upped their game, or we're making an awful lot of mistakes. And it seemed to be that we were making an awful lot of little mistakes, and Japan were very good in defence, I thought, and they were bringing the game to Scotland in defence, definitely, until unfortunately there was a stray. It wasn't even a stray shoulder; it was the whole body of the second row for Japan that absolutely smashed. I've forgotten who it was that smashed, but it was, you know, to get the red card, it was properly right to the head. So I honestly thought we were back to the old Scotland again. Mm-hmm. And then I believe there was a fairly frank halftime conversation. They came out and absolutely, they looked a different team.
Yeah. I mean, even though they looked a different team, Ian, I thought in the second half, they were still a little bit frantic and maybe a little bit more control that could have been a bigger score, because there were still times when it was almost like, and I suppose it's the thing that sometimes happens in rugby games, isn't it? The other team go down to 14 and you think, here we go, we've got a one-man advantage, this is going to be easy. And there were still times in that second half where, you know, passes were just flung a little bit recklessly and chances weren't taken. You know, it wasn't as clinical as it could have been.
Very much so. It was Rona Lloyd that got smashed in the face.
How she got smashed in the face and then still ran in some of those tries, I'll never know.
Yeah, and I couldn't believe as well, like, Hugh Dan was trying to talk it down. She was like, oh, there's a bit of a dip. It's like, Yeah, there's a tiny bit of a dip, and then there's a driving shoulder up the way, you know, into the jaw area. This is not good. That always seems to be the way with Scotland, though, is that, you know, the... Well, here's an interesting fact for you. That back line from 9 to 15, exactly the same back line as the game that started 2 years ago against Japan. So, obviously, you know, a wee bit of extra time together has helped their cohesion eventually, but they just took their time to show it. Like you said, you know, it's like when you go down to 14 players, you know, when the opponents go down, then a player, this expectation is then on you to like, oh, look, we now have all this extra space, let's use it. But, you know, the scores were still quite tight at that point, and you would think, all right, now's our chance, now we're the favourites. So I think maybe they had maybe a bit of white line fever set in, or they just lost their composure. But then, I had to turn the sound off at this point, but why the hell, when the clock showed 40, why wasn't the ball kicked out at the end of the first half once we turned it over on our own try line? Was the clock wrong on the TV? Do you know?
I think it's a white line fever.
Yeah, I mean...
I don't know.
Because I could understand the first couple because they were quite central. So it's like, do you really want to risk trying to boot it out to the touchline with, you know, Japanese players diving on top of you? They managed to get out wider. I think maybe Megan Gaffney was in possession, and as a winger, you know, she's used to booting the ball, so we nudge out, but see, we keep playing, lost it, and then lost the try. So that's a habit that Scotland really need to stop, is losing tries right on half time.
It's the I think it's that clinicalness, isn't it, that they need to develop, is that kind of a bit of ruthlessness, because I actually think the passing, even over the last few games, is so much sharper from the base of the ruck.
Yeah.
You know, that the passes are quick, they're sharp, they're direct, they're going through the hands quicker. There's maybe, I don't know, I think they're maybe trying to go a bit too wide, a bit too quickly, and struggling a little bit with the blitz defence. But I think it's the white line fever. That's what's holding them back at the minute. I think there's a bit more composure and patience, and the wins will come. And it's just, I think that's just experience, maybe, Craig.
Yeah, and they've got the pack to do it as well. They've got the forward pack, though. You know, in previous incarnations, you worried about the physicality of the Scotland pack, but the pack they've got just now is doing. You know, it used to be Jade Conkle stood out by a mile with her physicality, but actually they're now all kind of following in her footsteps, and so they've got the ability to suck the players in, especially when you're down to 14. They've got the ability to hit the rucks, and then move it out to the backs, because as you say, the passing has crispened up, has become far crisper. I'm trying to say the passing is very crisp and very, very quick, and they've got the ability to move the ball out to the wing, just as you say. But they need to use their pack a little bit more, I think.
Yeah. It was a good win. It kind of shows, that it's a team now that's had a bit of time together. Like you said, that's a consistent back line that we've got. I think the problem probably is, and I think we've seen it maybe when they've, like it's getting the depth now, but behind that, because who was it? Was it Mari? I can't remember the scrum half that was playing for a while. Second name escapes me. It's Mari was the first name, but I think it's just those players getting a chance to come on and kind of develop a little bit, because there isn't many opportunities for that, because the drop off after international rugby for a lot of the women is back down to the Scottish leagues. There are some playing in the Premier 15s, as you know, Ronan Loy is playing in France now, but I think when Scotland are at full strength, they could pretty much take anyone from number three in the world down in the rankings, and they have done. They've beaten France, beaten Ireland. You take easily kind of take on Canada, even England, New Zealand are maybe a bit of a stretch, but they've beaten all these other teams. It's just, but you worry what will happen when your big, you know, what the, these players get injured.
Yeah,
because you know, I mentioned the backs were all the same. The forward pack, there's actually very little change as well. One of them is that Rachel Malcolm started that match, the match in 2019. She started the hooker, but she was in the back this time. And Lana Skeldon was playing at hooker, so there, you know, that's someone who's quite a familiar face in a Scotland jersey. The only way we build depth is by getting a better infrastructure for all the players, like team perhaps, which we've discussed before. It's a concern, but you know, there's, you can see the progress that's being made, because I think especially defensively, because Japan, the last time they sort of carved us open, but we seem to be a lot more structured. There was they still looked dangerous, you know, played a fast-paced offloading game a couple of times in the second half. When it looked like, you know, looked like Scotland were starting to break clear, but then Japan starting to threaten until it was finished off. But yeah, we just look a lot better organised in defence. I think work rate has increased. I think fitness has got better, especially now that more of them are playing in professional surroundings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good.
Yeah.
I think that covers that game. We'll leave it there for our main podcast for this week, I think. Ethan, from either of you, before we move on to the sweary bit.
No, although just say Megan Gaffney's try was quite lovely, wasn't it? There was a brilliant offload from Sarah Bonner.
They were all lovely tries. To be fair, they were all absolutely beautiful tries. I mean, the one where, how is it? The one where somehow, even though it was like really late in the match, where Ronan Lloyd managed to somehow like beat the ball to then kind of like, even though she tripped halfway to try and catch it,
yeah.
I still made it.
Like both of them, she's like just chased kicks, just and just gone off like a, you know, a
I've heard from someone about the stats during the GB Sevens trials, and Rona Lloyd was still the third fastest. Now, to be, I don't know who was faster than her. It wasn't Jazz Joyce. It wasn't Jazz Joyce.
See, I
don't think it's humanly possible to be faster than Rona Lloyd.
See, who would win in a race between her and just before her Ronan Lloyd's second try, Chloe Raleigh had done a break from like 10 metres out and she went off. Like, you know what it is? I think it's because they've both got really long hair. As they run, it sort of goes in the wind like a, you know, their fetlocks blow in the wind, like a unicorn's tail.
And I think, you know what, Ronan Lloyd's got a bit, it's the same thing with Sean Maitland. When you watch Sean Maitland run, he goes really fast, but his legs look like they're walking.
Yeah.
Right? And yeah, Ronan Lloyd's got exactly the same. It's the long stride.
Long stride, somehow yeah.
Covering like half the pitch with one stride. Just, you're like, that person's not running fast at all. Hang on a minute, they're running faster than the ball's been kicked. Yeah. Anyway, we'll leave it there for this week. So thank you very much to our regular listeners. For Patreons, if you hang on, if you're watching live, you'll get the Patreon Extra podcast in a moment. For Patreons who are listening along, you can go and listen to the second part of this podcast very shortly. We will possibly have a Japan v Scotland preview podcast, depending on how things go, once the teams are announced, which we're probably expecting that Thursday. So normally Friday lunchtime, we try and do a wee half an hour preview podcast over the lunchtime. For the moment, though, it is goodbye from me and goodbye from Ian and Craig.
Bye.
Ciao.